Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hello, boys and girls. It's time for your weekly installation of Prostitution 101. Now, you know, I didn't label it Prostitution 101. The folks over at KCRA, Channel 3 in Sacramento, called it Prostitution 101. And if you want to check that out, just Google for Veronica Monet, KCRA, or Prostitution 101, KCRA. They've actually got their whole program online. You can watch the program. It was kind of fun, and, you know,
they were trying to do a little bit of a smear job, but they changed their minds halfway through and actually did kind of a nice piece. So, anyway, this is some of the material that I cover when I'm out and about giving lectures at colleges, universities, maybe talking to the folks over at Mensa, you know, those brainiacs who are really, really smart. And really, really nerdy, but actually kind of cool. I love hanging out with the Mensa people because they actually ask me intelligent questions during the Q&A. You know, questions and answers after the lecture. Anyway, I know I've been kind of hitting you over the head with some of my feminist politics and sex worker politics, and that may not be your cup of tea. And it's Christmas time, so I'm going to go light on you tonight and make it fun. Okay, so people got all kinds of questions when I go out and talk to the colleges. They certainly do. When I talk to other audiences where perhaps people have been around the block a few times, I still get asked these questions. So you may know the definitions of some of these terms, and then again, you may not. So you can test your sex worker IQ. And I'm going to be talking about things like doubles and half and Greek and GFE and cortisone and FBSM and BDSM and toilet training and French. I think most of us know what that is, but I'm going to cover it all. So let's start off with the old double. You know, I'm going to start with doubles because that's where I started. I started working as an escort with my girlfriend. We used to do something we called a manwich. I think we stole that from some fast food place or frozen dinner place, I don't know. But anyway, a manwich for escorts is when you have one male client who wants to be sandwiched between two female providers. Oh, we don't say John, we say client. It's more civilized. And we don't say hooker, we say provider. Providing that she wants to be called a provider. Now, not everybody who is a provider, not everybody who offers sex for money is actually a female. Some providers are male, some of them are transgender. However, if you ever talk to me or otherwise hear about somebody of the male persuasion who tries to convince you that they're able to make an entire year's wages seeing nothing but female clients, they're lying. The market just isn't there. Now, I hope someday that changes. Maybe if Heidi Fleiss has her way and is able to open up a brothel in Nevada, the only state in the union where you can have legal brothels, then she wants to open up a brothel that will be specifically catering towards female clientele, and all of the providers will be men. And if that day ever comes, I'm going to rent a bus and I'll gather up a whole bunch of my sex worker girlfriends, and we're going to go be the first people in the door. 'Cause it's fun to be on the other side. Trust me, it's fun to be on the other side. I've actually gotten to try that a couple times. Went to the Mustang Ranch with my husband, and we hired a woman, and it was just more fun than anybody has a right to have. I really got to see the other side and understand why people were paying me all that money, because it's worth every penny. It's just an amazing ride to be able to pay a sex professional. It's way better than Disneyland. Anyhow, so, doubles. That's what we sold. We sold doubles. So these guys would come to see her and I. And we also had Girl-Girl Act. Yeah, everybody knows what that is. That's what Madonna and Britney Spears are always trying to pretend they're doing. But we did it for real. You know, we would wear lingerie, and then at some point the lingerie would come off. And a lot of times we just would make love to each other. Nice euphemism for having sex. Having sex with each other, girl-girl sex in front of these clients. And sometimes they'd actually be sitting across the room in an armchair just watching. That's quite a picture, huh? And then other times they couldn't resist and they'd have to come join us. And if they came to join us, that would be a double. Okay. So a half and half, that's really a street term. Not very many indoor prostitutes use the word half and half. In the street, it means that you're going to get a blowjob for half the time and you're going to get straight vaginal sex for the other half of the time. So it's called a half and half. And there's a different rate for that than there is for just a simple blowjob. What is a BBJ? A BBJ is a bareback blowjob. And I do not recommend them. I never, ever gave bareback blowjobs when I was working. There is some argument as to whether or not it's actually that hazardous to your health, because some people argue that the enzymes, this is going to get kind of gross, but the digestive enzymes inside your mouth will actually kill whatever germs you put in there. I suppose there might be some truth to that, but who wants to take the risk? Not I. So, yes, it is possible to give fantastic blowjobs using a condom. I've done it more times than I'll ever be able to count. And obviously I was doing a good job because they came back over and over and over and over again. Anyhow, so that's what a bareback blowjob is. Or if you see the shorthand, it's BBJ. There's another shorthand out there. And sometimes that's like Big Beautiful Women, BBW, Big Beautiful Women. Those are maybe queen-size providers, and there is a whole following for that type of provider. May not be as popular as a size 4 blonde, but it is nevertheless, for that particular market, the only way to go. So if a client has a taste for big, beautiful women, he's never going to hang out with the skinny girls. And vice versa, if a client only likes to see skinny girls, he's not going to hang out with the big, beautiful women. So you got to know your market. Anyhow, Greek. I think a lot of people probably know what Greek is. Greek is anal sex. And it's interesting. That didn't used to be that popular. There weren't very many people who provided that. And then we got the bend-over boyfriend videos, and there were a lot of anal scenes and double penetration scenes. Oh, what's double penetration? Double penetration is when two dildos or two cocks, that would be two men, try to insert their penis into one woman. Now, a lot of times that means she's being penetrated vaginally and anally, which is kind of a strange thing because in some ways it's like the men are having sex with each other, because when you are that close to each other, you're going to actually be rubbing each other, even though there's going to be a piece of skin between the two of you. You're still going to be able to feel the other guy's penis rubbing up against yours. So if you've rented any porn, you probably have seen double penetration films, and a lot of people are out there actually just experimenting with that and trying it. Anal sex is now very popular among the younger set. There's a lot of 20-somethings who actually do Greek or anal on the first date. That used to be something that people saved until they got to know each other a little better, or maybe, you know, had been having sex for a while and then they wanted to spice it up. But now a lot of people are just having anal sex the first time they hop into bed with each other. Some things you need to know about anal sex: it's a really, really dangerous thing to do. One of the reasons that it's dangerous is because your rectum is designed to absorb. It's designed to absorb nutrients. So when you try to put other things up there, it sucks it up inside and tries to digest it. Again, some of this stuff might be a little gross. So sorry, but you really need to know this. So one of the things that you have to do when you're having anal sex is use an awful lot of lube, because the rectum doesn't produce its own lubricant. The vagina does. The rectum does not. And not only that, but the rectum will suck up all your lube. And then you'll be out of lube again, and those things will start getting dry pretty quick. So the temptation becomes that people want to use things like Vaseline or cooking oil, olive oil, rubbing oil, or, you know, if you ever watched that old film, the, I can't even remember the name of it now. Anyway, they stuck Crisco up the girl's butt. gross. Totally gross. But that's great if you're not going to use a condom. But the thing is that you should be using a condom. And if you're using a condom, you're going to have to use a water-soluble lubricant, which means you're going to have a lot of it, because it's going to get sucked up pretty quickly. Now, just keep that in mind. As fast as your lubrication disappears up your butt, so will everything else. So if you use a dildo and it doesn't have a flange on it, that's going to be a sad thing. A lot of times the rectum will suck it up, and it might suck it all the way up where you can never get it back. You're going to have to go to the hospital to get it back. So many people wind up going to emergency rooms with strange things up their butts. And it's kind of funny. If you talk to anybody who's worked in an emergency room, they've got tons of stories about people that have got just all kinds of strange things. Screwdrivers up there. I mean, you know, you just wonder, how do people get those up there? But the part that's not funny is that it can go up so far that it actually creates something called an obstruction, and you can die. So don't ever put anything up your butt that doesn't have a flange on it. That's just something at the base that keeps it from going past a certain point, so it would get stopped. Or something that's attached, like, you know, your fist is attached to your arm. Your penis is attached to your torso. Those things won't get sucked up there and lost, and so that's a good thing. You want to use a condom because if your partner, God forbid, happened to have some kind of a germ or a virus or a disease, you would just suck it straight into your bloodstream. You are going to create little tears in your rectum if you have anal sex, and those tears are a pipeline to your bloodstream. It's just going to go straight into your bloodstream. So anyway, sorry to digress into the safer sex things, but I will be doing that as we make our way through all these cute little sex worker terms for different sex acts. And hopefully you'll have a safer, sexy Christmas if you celebrate Christmas, or Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa, or solstice, or just the fact that it's winter, or New Year's, whatever you are or are not celebrating this year. I hope that it's sexy and safe. That's what you want. We want it to be sexy and safe. So, okay, that's your little tips for anal sex there. Oh, one other thing you need to know. Some people want to try anal and they're not experienced, and it's kind of scary. So I recommend, don't start with a penis, don't start with a dildo, start with a finger. Fingers are so much friendlier than any of that stuff. And it could be your own finger, it could be the finger of a friend. But fingers are small, they're warm, they're pliable. There's a lot to recommend a finger. But the only problem with a finger is it does have a fingernail. And the fingernail can kind of scrape the inside of your rectum. So all you got to do is get a latex glove. If you're allergic to latex, get a vinyl glove. They sell both at almost any drugstore, and they usually have these big boxes of them. As a matter of fact, you may not want to buy a whole box, but who knows? I don't know how much fun you have planned. But if you use a glove, it will slide in very nicely. It's going to be nice and smooth. You won't be able to feel any fingernails. And if that doesn't work for you, then trim that fingernail down to nothing. For two reasons. One, so it doesn't hurt your partner. And two, so that you don't get any fecal matter underneath your fingernail. Okay. And the best way to do this is to actually have your partner lay on their back, so that their stomach is facing up, and then using lots of lubricant, you start rubbing that around the anus. That's the outside of the rectum. You just run it around the rim there, and that feels really, really good to everybody. Everybody likes that sensation. Well, there's always one person who's a party poop, but I would say almost 99% of all the people on this planet find that really, really irresistibly erotic to have the outside of the rectum, the anus, rubbed. And especially if you do it light. You do it very nice and light with lots and lots of lubricant. And then when your partner maybe starts to squirm a little bit or breathe a little heavy, then it kind of gives you this clue that maybe they want a little more, like they're starting to wish you were inside of them, then you can push in just through the first inch. And that usually takes you up to the first joint in your finger. So it's not actually all the way up to the knuckle, but, you know, the first bend in your finger. And you can just sit there for a minute and let your partner kind of relax and breathe, because that first sphincter muscle on the outside is under your partner's control. They can relax it. They can tighten it. We all know this. It's the one that we tighten if we don't want to, you know, accidentally shit our pants. If you're trying to control your bowels, you use that. So there is going to be a second sphincter muscle about an inch and a half to 2 inches up inside the rectum. That one your partner has no control over. That one is controlled by the parasympathetic nervous system. And what that means in lay terms is that if your partner is nervous, it's going to be clenched real tight. And there's not a thing they can do about it. Then you could talk sweet to them. They could say, oh, I'm going to try to relax, and it's not going to happen. The only way that sphincter muscle is going to relax is if, in fact, your partner is relaxed. So if you come up against a brick wall there and you're not able to get your finger in, back off. Take a time out. Let your partner relax. Let your partner think about something else. You got to give the body a chance to catch up with your intentions here. If it doesn't work that night, save it for another night. But whatever you do, don't try to force through that second sphincter muscle. Now, if you do get to go through that second sphincter muscle, then the next thing you want to do is wiggle your finger in kind of the come here motion. Now, if you are inserting your finger inside of a man's rectum, you're going to be coming in contact with his prostate. And the prostate is the organ that produces prostatic fluid, which is what joins the sperms and comes out of when the man ejaculates. All that fluid has got sperm in it, but quite a bit of it is actually coming from the prostate gland. We call this the male G-spot. So you may or may not have heard about the female G-spot. I'll talk about that in a minute. But males also have a G-spot. Most doctors will say, well, it's not really a G-spot, it's a prostate. It doesn't really matter. I've had my finger up men's butts. I've had my finger up women's vaginas. I have found G-spots on both men and women. They all feel the same to me. There's like this little indentation. The more you play with it with the tip of your finger, the harder it gets, and it becomes a little more concave. And both lead to these very intense internal orgasms and usually produce ejaculations as well. So, if you happen to be working on a man, You're going to look for that little indentation at the end of your finger, and it, like I said, it's only about an inch and a half to 2 inches in. And we are, again, doing the come here motion with our finger if your partner is laying on their back and you have put your hand in, palm up. So that basically your finger is pointing in the direction of your partner's stomach when you make the come here motion. And you want to pay a lot of attention to your partner if they're moving around a lot or grimacing. You may want to back off. You might want to be a little more gentle with your touch. And if they're making a lot of pleasant noises and they've got a happy look on their face, then, you know, you might actually want to be a little rougher and see how much they can take. Because sometimes the rougher you play with the prostate, the rougher you play with that G-spot, the more intense the orgasm will be. But, you know, as long as you keep communicating with your partner, they'll be able to tell you which direction they're going in, whether they want more or less. If you happen to be with a woman, there's a lot of sensation in a woman's rectum as well. However, the G-spot is not in the rectum. And you're probably not going to get as intense a reaction. Depends. Every woman's a little different. But I can tell you that most of the really intense reactions that I've had, pleasurably intense reactions that I have been witness to rectally, have come from men. So, you know, men are kind of built for anal stimulation. Whether we like that or not, you know, whether it appeals to our sense about heterosexuality or homophobia, it's really of no concern to me. I just deal in facts about bodies. So I don't really make any judgments. I don't think because a man likes to be penetrated in his rectum that that makes him straight or gay or bisexual. I think it just makes him human. Anyway, if you want to find a woman's G-spot, you're going to do the same thing, only you're going to go into her vagina instead of her rectum. So she's laying on her back, your palm up with your hand, you're going inside of her vagina, and you're going to make a come here motion with your finger when you get to about an inch and a half to 2 inches in. And again, your finger is going to be moving in the direction of her stomach. You're going to find a little spot that feels different than everywhere else in the vagina. If you feel around the walls of the vagina, they're all smooth. There's a whole bunch of folds of skin. But at that anterior top part of the vagina, which is facing towards the stomach, it's kind of a wrinkly, hard thing. It feels a little bit like the roof of your mouth. And, you know, those rough ridges that are up there, and the more you play with it, the harder or more erect it gets underneath that skin. And it starts to be a little concave, and you're going to get quite a bit of reaction from a woman. Now, every woman's different. She may hate it, she may love it. And you're going to have to pay close attention to it. She may like it gently. She may want it really rough. Everybody's built different on this one, seriously. And not just in desire, but literally built differently. Some women have more erectile tissue on the other side there, which creates more stimulation. And there's another sensation that comes with arousing a woman's G-spot, and that is the sense that you're going to urinate. The women think they're going to pee all over the bed, and a lot of times they get really frightened and they can't relax, and they keep thinking they got to get up and go to the bathroom. The best way to eliminate that feeling is to encourage your female partner to go to the bathroom right before you decide to stimulate her G-spot. So she knows that her bladder is empty, she doesn't have a thing to worry about, and then be sure and put a towel down. You want to put a towel underneath her just in case she does ejaculate, even if she's never ejaculated before. Stimulating the G-spot can often lead to the very first female ejaculation. Now, what is female ejaculate? It's not urine. Sometimes if the woman has not emptied her bladder, a little bit of urine is going to come out with it. But that's just because the muscular contractions that are taking place can generalize to the bladder as well and empty its contents. that we're not entirely sure where this female ejaculate is stored. There's a lot of disagreement in the medical community, and it's interesting that they haven't done more research on this, but some research has been done. For instance, just to eliminate the possibility that it was urine, some scientists gave women this pill that turns your pee blue. And the women went to the bathroom, and sure enough, their pee was blue. Then they asked them to female ejaculate. So the women masturbated to the point where they female ejaculated. The fluid came out of what looked like the same, you know, hole, the urethra, and it wasn't blue. So now they were very perplexed. Well, where, if the urine is blue and there's other fluid coming out and it's not blue, where is it coming from? Some of us think that it might be in the parathyroid glands or the Skene's glands. There's a bunch of little tiny glands that are behind that area, and there's some disagreement as to where it's coming from. However, I think the thing that's really telling is that women have these little tiny pin-sized ducts. I mean, they look like little teeny, teeny, tiny pinholes, one on either side of the urethra. The urethra is where the urine comes out of. It's located just above the vagina and below the clitoris. And you can see it with the naked eye, this little hole that the pee comes out of. On either side of that are these little tiny parathyroid ducts. And that has been documented as being where a female ejaculate comes out of. It comes out of these little tiny ducts that lie on either side of the urethra. What I think is fascinating about that is that if women don't female ejaculate, why do they have parathyroid ducts? That's the thing that a lot of doctors need to be put on the spot to answer that question. But a lot of doctors don't even know that women have parathyroid ducts. So if you really want to see diagrams of this, some of the best information about a woman's genitalia is in a fabulous book called The Clitoral Truth. It's written by a couple of lesbians. It's got really great illustrations, and I highly recommend it. And I personally think it's one of the most complete resources on the topic right now, The Clitoral Truth. If you get a chance, check it out. Okay, so what to do if your girlfriend thinks she's going to ejaculate. You know, you've got to pay a lot of attention because every woman's different. You might want to stimulate her clitoris while you're stimulating her G-spot. You might just want to stimulate her G-spot. She may want you to stimulate it up to a point, and then it gets too sensitive, and she's going to want you to back off. Every woman is so individual on this that it's kind of hard to have a formula. That's why you got to learn how to communicate. If you really, really want to have hot sex, you're going to have to learn how to communicate. Okay, so it's been tested. The ejaculate comes out of a woman. It has a lot of prostatic fluid in it. So even though women don't have prostate glands, they are producing this ejaculate that is very similar to prostatic fluid. It has some of the same chemical compounds. It smells a little different. It definitely doesn't have an ammonia smell to it. It smells a little musky, and sometimes some people think it tastes like walnuts or almonds, so it kind of has a nutty taste to it, and it feels a little bit oily. So whereas urine feels like water, it just feels like water, and it smells like ammonia, and we all know what that smells like. You know, it's the dirty diapers. That's ammonia. Dirty diapers have ammonia in them. That's the smell. Female ejaculate doesn't smell like that at all. It smells musky, and it's a little bit oily, and it has kind of a nutty taste. And, of course, it varies from woman to woman. It also varies in the same woman. So depending on where a woman is in her menstrual cycle, depending on, you know, her age, depending on her health, depending on a lot of things, maybe what she ate that day or that week, it's going to change the taste, the flavor, and the smell of the female ejaculate. Sometimes it's only a little teaspoon or a tablespoon. Sometimes it can be a quarter of a cup. Sometimes it can be more like a couple of cups. sometimes it comes out just within, say, like an inch or two. Sometimes you can shoot a whole 3 feet out. If you want to see an excellent video about female ejaculation, you want to check out Femme Fatale's How to Female Ejaculate. How to Female Ejaculate. I was on the set the day this was being filmed. It's probably, I don't know, 15 years old, so it's not a recent entry to the discourse on female ejaculation, but I think it's one of the better ones. That we've got some sex celebs in there. For instance, Carol Queen masturbates till female ejaculation. And if you don't know who Carol Queen is, you can check her out on the internet. She was one of the founders of the Good Vibrations dildo stores in San Francisco, and she's written a lot of books, and she's a very well-known sex expert. There's also a doctor by the name of Dr. Shannon Bell, who is on this video, and I have dubbed her the Olympic ejaculator. Dr. Shannon Bell is amazing. She can ejaculate over and over and over again, and she always produces fluid that goes out about 3 feet. It does it on command. I mean, this woman is just, I don't know how she does it. If for no other reason at all, you need to get a copy of this. I think it's probably on a DVD at this point, just so you can see Dr. Shannon Bell, or check her out on the internet and get something else that she stars in. She's produced a couple of her own erotic films as well. Very interesting woman, and quite the female ejaculator. So you don't have to be afraid of female ejaculate. We haven't really determined whether it could possibly be HIV positive, so you know, you may want to practice safer sex techniques if you are not sure about your partner's seropositivity. You know, use gloves, use dental dams, clean up the towel, whatever. But just FYI, when it comes to HIV, haven't really had a lot of documentation of it being spread from woman to woman or even from woman to man unless there's blood. So as it exists right now, the best transmitters of HIV, which is, of course, the virus that leads to AIDS, is first and foremost blood, and second, it's semen. So the ejaculate that comes out of a man is much more dangerous than the ejaculate that comes out of a woman. And the only documented cases that we've had about lesbians spreading HIV to each other, they were either having sex on their periods, so there you got blood, or they were sharing needles. Again, it's blood transmission. So anyway, but, you know, just know that there's always risk, and you just have to decide what risk you're comfortable with. You kind of have to think about sex like you're driving a car. You know, every time you get into a car, you're taking your life in your hands, and yet you still decide to do it because you want to get from point A to point B, and you really can't function in today's society without getting in a car. And even if you're not driving your own car, you're going to let somebody else drive you in a bus or on a train or in a plane. So one way or the other, you're going to be in a moving vehicle, which creates risk. Sex is the same way. You're not going to be able to eliminate all the risk. There will always be risk. And the only way you could eliminate risk is if you stay home and masturbate, which is not always such a bad idea. But if you want to bring another human being into the equation, then you are risking something, and you just have to decide how much risk you can tolerate. And if you look at it that way, then you won't try to be too anal retentive or perfectionistic about making sure that there's absolutely zero risk when you have sex, because that's impossible. Okay, so before we run out of time here, what does GFE mean? If you're on the internet and you see an ad that says GFE, what does that mean? It stands for the girlfriend experience. Now, that's become really, really overused at this point. Everybody wants to say that they offer GFE for good reason. You can charge more for it. I used to advertise myself as GFE. Now, what I meant was that I would not rush you, And I just know that there's some people out there who probably could say, well, she did too rush me, and I probably did, but that was before I started calling myself GFE. Or it was when I was trying to make that down payment for my house. So sorry about that, guys. Anyway, GFE is not supposed to rush her clients, and she's not supposed to treat them like a number. Now, you might be wondering, who cares, right? If you get off, then you got your money's worth, so what? Believe it or not, most of the guys who go to see providers who pay for sex, most of those guys want to be treated like they're special. That's more important to them than having an orgasm, and I would know. So no matter what they tell their friends, how tough and macho they try to pretend to be, most men really want all those little bells and whistles. They want you to hold them and kiss them and talk nice to them and do foreplay and take your time. And you know, they really want it to be a personal unrushed experience. If they just wanted to have an orgasm, they could have stayed home and save their money, because we all know how to get ourselves off better than anybody else can. The whole reason you go to see another human being is usually for a couple of reasons. One, you're touch deprived, and we all need to be touched. You know, they've done experiments with little monkeys. If they don't get touched, they die. Same thing with human babies. You don't touch a human baby, it'll die. Well, okay, so as grown-ups, we don't die, but we shrivel up and wish we were dead. So touching is really, really important to us as mammals. We just need touch. And the other reason, of course, is ego. Every single one of us wants to feel like we're somebody important, somebody special. And sometimes, you know, even when you're paying for sex, you want to feel like I'm special. It's interesting how some people will try to make themselves feel special. I've had clients refuse to have sex with me even though they'd paid for it, because that would make them special. Oh, all those other clients are having sex with you. I'll be special by being the one client who paid you for your time and didn't have sex with you. I always thought that was quite interesting. It was fine with me, but I thought it was very strange. But so that happened more than once. And then one of the other popular things is, when are you going to tell me your real name? Everybody else knows you as Veronica. I want to know your real name. Well, I have news for you. Veronica is my real name. Now, it's not the name my mother hung on me when I was born, but it's definitely my real name. I picked it, so it's more real than the one they gave me when I was born, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, that's an obsession of some guys. Oh, what's your real name? They'll even go through your bills and try to sneak into your desk so they can find out what your real name is. Anyhow, this is why GFE is so popular. The girlfriend experience is all about getting away from things that seem too professional, too much about the money, too impersonal, too rushed, too something. The guy who goes to see a girl who advertises herself as GFE is looking for somebody who's going to treat him like he is her boyfriend. She's going to act like his girlfriend. And that means he hopes that she's going to be sweet, she's going to be attentive. Some guys think that that means that they are going to get to kiss full on the mouth, and sometimes that is the case, and other times it's not. So, I mean, if you've got expectations that GFE means that you're going to have unprotected sex, you're way off in left field. So, you know, nobody who offers GFE should be taking their life in their hands. And if you ever, ever run into somebody who's willing to have unprotected sex with you for the right price, run. Run away as quickly as you can. Because trust me, you're not the only one who's getting that bargain basement deal. And that means you're taking a lot of risk. But GFE does mean that you're going to feel very special and catered to, and she may go out of her way to, you know, remember little details about you, so the next time that you come to see her, you know, you will feel like you've got a real friend there and somebody who has taken the time to pay attention to your life and to your stories and seems to give a damn about things other than just getting you off and getting you out of their room. Courtesan. Let's save that for last. Okay, let's go to FBSM. I get asked sometimes, what does FBSM stand for? Full body sensual massage. Let me say that again. FBSM stands for full body sensual massage. Now what that means is that you are going to get a really good hand job, or as some people call it, a happy ending. You're not going to get a blow job. You're not going to get vaginal intercourse. You're not going to get Greek or anal sex. You're going to get a hand job. And that usually comes after a full body sensual massage. So basically, you're going to get a full body massage. You're going to get your entire body rubbed down. You're just going to be laying there relaxing, listening to the wonderful metaphysical music and smelling the aromatherapy. And then at some point, she's going to roll you over, work her way down to your privates, and you're going to have an orgasm. And you probably won't even have to open your eyes at any point or interact with her at any point. It's just going to be part of the massage. It's very discreet, a little less personal, a lot less personal than GFE in a lot of cases. I mean, you can get a lot of massages like these at massage parlors. And I think probably the most annoying thing for most of the full-body sensual massage providers is when they're encountering clients who are incessantly asking them to do full service. Now, they were very specific to tell you that you're going to get a full body sensual massage, not full service. Full service means that your provider is going to have sexual intercourse with you. And if somebody says not full service, then they don't provide that. And that means they don't provide it at any rate. You can't buy that. You can't negotiate for that. If they don't advertise one way or the other and you walk in and somebody, you know, says it's $100 and the next thing you know, you're asking for something more and they say, well, I need another tip, then you'll know that there's probably a lot of stuff available. But anyway, you know, I don't just want to, like, tell you what these mean in prostitution terms because, frankly, a lot of these words are being used also with dating nowadays. So obviously people aren't going to use things like GFE because you wouldn't be having a girlfriend experience. You would actually be having a girlfriend. And nobody's going to use the word courtesan. But other things like doubles and full body sensual massage or some of the stuff we're going to get into right after this, sometimes people will refer to that when there's no pay involved. BDSM. BDSM. People used to say SNM. They don't say that anymore. They used to say B&D. They don't say that anymore. They put the four of them together. It is now BDSM, which is short for bondage, discipline, sadomasochism. Now, bondage means that you tie somebody up. Lots of people do bondage. They don't use that word. That sounds so scary. It's like, oh, no. Bondage. You know, what is that, like slavery? No. Bondage just means that you're tying your partner up. You might use a little silk scarf to tie their wrists together, or you might put a blindfold on your partner and tickle them with a feather. These are really mild forms of bondage. Severe forms of bondage, you take a rope and you tie their entire body until they can barely breathe. Now, that might sound really horrific, but actually, I have been completely tied up by a beautiful dominatrix in Seattle, and it's one of the most liberating experiences when you don't even have to worry about how you're going to sit or stand. You would be surprised how much energy we are expending in how we're going to sit or stand. But if you have been completely bound by rope and blindfolded, you don't have to do anything. You don't even have to worry about how you're going to hold your head or giving eye contact to the person in the room. It's just, like, so freeing. Discipline. Discipline is kind of like having a slave. You know, sit down. shut up, lick my feet, kiss my ass, go wash my dishes. On your hands and knees, I want you to dust the furniture. That's discipline. And I was never crazy about it, but, you know, everybody's got a day when you could probably want to bark out some orders like that. Sadism, that is somebody who enjoys inflicting pain. And let's see. That's an interesting thing, and I'm thinking that before I actually go into that discussion, we're kind of running out of time here. We've got a few more minutes. I could say a little bit about that. I actually want to do a whole program about BDSM because I know it's a really scary topic for people, and I want to bring on some experts to really go into detail about it. But, so this is going to be like the little summary. Sadism is somebody who likes to inflict pain. I know that sounds horrible, but in fact, it can be a really hot thing for both people. And you don't have to be perverted, whatever that word means. You don't have to have a mental disorder. There's some people that are just born that way. And really, if you look to nature, there's quite a bit of it going on as well. For instance, cats have a pretty violent sex life, and they seem to enjoy it quite a bit because they keep doing it. And and that's just the way they're built. I have met a lot of people that are just built that way, too. You give them you just smack them on the rear, and they immediately get an erection. And other people, you can smack them on the rear, and they will lose an erection. And for my money, that means we're all wired differently. So we're wasting a lot of time and energy judging each other for being different. It's okay to be different. Masochism, you know, sadomasochism. Masochism is the other side of sadism. So you have people who like to inflict pain, and you've got people who enjoy having pain inflicted. And the big thing that I would say about this is that you don't have to be cruel to enjoy inflicting pain on another person. You can actually be somebody who takes a great deal of delight in your partner's pleasure. And if you know how much pain feels good to them, then that becomes an incentive for inflicting it. A masochist is not somebody who's got low self-esteem. A masochist is actually somebody whose pain receptors register pleasure. So like I was saying, you know, you spank them on their rear, and that translates as a pleasurable erotic feeling for them. And if you could think of it in those terms, we're not talking about people who want to be, you know, brutalized because they don't, you know, care about life or they don't care about themselves. We're talking about people who've actually are kind of, if anything, probably addicted to their form of pleasure. So you have to think about it as this is pleasurable to them. It feels totally different to them than perhaps it does to you. If you're not into that sort of thing, I don't know. Some of you out there may be into this sort of thing and know exactly what I'm talking about. Toilet training. I don't like toilet training, but I say that with some caveats. There's golden showers, and then there's scat. And some people actually like to have somebody have a bowel movement on them. There are entire storefuls of Japanese films about this. Apparently it's a huge fetish in Japan of women having bowel movements on men. And when I was getting my certification as a sex educator, I had to watch some of those videos. And I have to tell you something. I had trouble eating my dinner that night. Hours and hours later, I just couldn't get those images out of my head. And for me personally, I find it nauseating and disgusting. But there's some people out there who do not feel that way. And I can't really make a reasonable argument against it, although for sanitary reasons, I think it could pose something of a health risk. But if you know what you're doing and you take precautions, my God, you know, there's animals out there that love to eat it and smell it. And, you know, we think they're God's creatures. So I have to try to give the same level of acceptance to human beings who may be built the same way as some of the animals that are built that way. Golden showers is when you urinate on another person. And golden showers can actually, there's a lot more people who enjoy that. They may want to feel the warm sensation of the urine on them, or they may actually enjoy the taste of it and like drinking it. So that's toilet training. Oh my God, I have 2 minutes. I do not want to leave you on toilet training for Christmas. ouch. Okay, so how do I save your Christmas? let's go back to female ejaculate. It's so much sexier. actually, prostate massage for men. You know what? They were doing that during World War II. So your grandparents or your great-grandparents or your great-great-great-grandparents were doing butt play. It's been around forever, and it's a really normal human thing. And I think in particular for men, it can be incredibly healthy to stimulate the prostate gland because that can actually reduce congestion and lead to better health as far as reducing risk of prostate cancer. Or at least that's what the medical professionals tell us. You should verify that with your own doctor since I'm not your doctor. And female ejaculate is ejaculation is just an amazing freeing experience for women. I highly recommend it. I think, you know, getting to that point to where you can ejaculate as a woman is taking your empowerment as a woman one step further. So that it's okay to be messy, it's okay to be loud, it's okay to be, you know, very sexual. And same thing with prostate massage for men. It's okay to make a lot of noise during an orgasm, usually when men are having prostatic orgasms. When you're stimulating the prostate gland and a man has an orgasm, it's an internal orgasm. It's very emotional. Most of the men I've given those kind of orgasms to have collapsed in my arms crying. It's just really, really intense. And I think it's an awesome gift to take a man there and let him experience that side of himself and find out there's way more to sex than he ever thought there was. Okay, that seems like a much better place to end today's discussion. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Prostitution 101. Tune in New Year's Eve for part 4. Bye. Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian.